Chapter 53. Melkor had ordered his Cretesian company of soldiers to shutter their lanterns and wait behind a tumble of boulders that had the appearance of having tumbled down a mild slope before slamming into the mighty elder trees. To his fearful countrymen, the darkness of the elder wood was a monster all its own, something to be feared because of what it conjured in the imagination. And in the elder wood, the imagination wasn't always wrong. So he couldn't blame them for the slight tremor of their hands and their nervous glances. Even before the primal shadow had taken him, Melkor had learned to overcome such fears. But now the uncanny ability the shadow had gifted him to move soundlessly and without scent in the blackness turned the woods into a place of power and opportunity for him. When his foot alighted upon a crisp leaf or branch, it crumbled or snapped without the slightest noise. And that, in combination with his ability to shrink and grow, had allowed him his current advantageous position 100 feet from the Queen's camp. Stretched out on his belly behind a root, he could spy them through a gap in 2 trees. A group of Itamarchians huddled together at the base of an elder oak, faces worn. There were soldiers stationed at intervals, and he was sure he couldn't see them all. From time to time, the Aur-Katan woman he had smashed in the flame cathedral crossed between the trees, holding her quartz-tipped spear. He hadn't hit her hard enough, apparently. The North people were a tough lot. But Baron Carver was absent. Had he ever been with the group, or was he prowling around somewhere in the form of the huge saber-cat? It didn't matter, for his prize was in sight. The Queen sat in the middle of the mass of people, complicating his shot. Her luxurious hair was a bit limp now, but unmistakable next to the blonde locks of her younger sister. He needed to get the Lady Hightower apart from the rest so his shot could be precise. The first shot was for her, and when it rang out, his 50 soldiers were to assault the rest of the party. He breathed out, finding patience an easy virtue since the shadow had smothered his desire. If everything was ultimately pointless, then it mattered little if he took his shot sooner, later, or at all. But this needed to happen. The opportunity to enact his plan would come, and he would not rush it. This task he would accomplish in a very particular way, and as the shadow would no doubt agree, emotion would only endanger success. But even as he kept his eye on Arianne Hightower, her well-appointed form barely more than a shadow, he could feel that youthful stirring within him that had set him on his present course. He controlled it. The shadow mustn't guess his purpose. He kept his sight lined up on her, thankful he had acquired one of the quality Bitamarchian rifles rather than the poor offerings of his own nation. And then a deafening roar broke through the darkness of the elder wood like an angry thunder. Even the leaves seemed to tremble, though it might have been the sudden evacuation of everything with legs or wings from every nearby tree. He could only imagine the streams of urine running down the legs of his countrymen behind the boulders. Would the fear of the wrath of a member of the Fist outweigh their fear of some animal in the dark? But Melkor knew that the roar was not the work of any ordinary animal. Baron Carver was here, and it was likely he knew that someone had come for the Queen. The time for action had come. Melkor reaffixed his gaze down the sights of the rifle. An unintended but fortuitous side effect of the roar was that everyone in the Bitamarchian party had stood and was milling about, including the Queen. Owing to the skirts of her dress, he couldn't tell precisely where her legs were, but he would take the chance. He pulled the trigger. The bullet ripped through the dress, and the Queen fell to the ground, wincing and holding her leg.
"Why did you not kill her?" the shadow asked. "I want her alive," he answered. "If we can execute her in front of the walls of Belshire, then it is almost assured that the Bitamarchians will leave their fortifications and attack us. It will also bolster the morale of our men and crush theirs."
The primal shadow seemed content with the explanation, and Melkor reloaded. Behind him he could hear the Cretesian soldiers slinking out of their hiding places and navigating cautiously forward, as the Bitamarchian guard took pot shots in the dark, bullets aimed at educated guesses tearing through the leaves. Melkor shot down 2 of the Queen's guards as another roar tore through the forest. His men stopped and dropped to a knee. Melkor shook his head. He would need to inspire them to better efforts. Someone was pulling the Queen away from the conflict just as he intended. First, he would need to bolster his men,
Then he would find Lady Ariane Hightower. Pain pulsed through Ariane's leg with every beat of her heart. She put a hand down along her left thigh and felt wetness there along with a hole in the skirt of her dress. All thought had fled after the booming shot, but Davin's roar had cleared her head enough to move. Soldiers readied weapons and took up position behind logs, rocks, and trees, a frantic Captain Gage kneeling in front of her, his rifle pointed into the inscrutable dark. Key grabbed her under the shoulder and hauled her up.
The shot came from the west. Behind the tree, Ariane, now!
Walking felt like fire was searing her leg with every step, and she stumbled. Mr. Goodwin was just ahead, shoving Elaine behind the same tree, and after she was settled, he returned to take Ariane's other arm. With Key and Mr. Goodwin at her side, Ariane circled the tree in short order and sat next to her sister.
How bad is it? Mr. Goodwin asked.
I don't know, she answered.
Key fished her blue moss out of her bag and handed it to Mr. Goodwin.
Hold it close to the wound.
Key ripped the dress open where the bullet had torn it and peered at the damaged thigh.
It's not deep. I'll use a slice of your dress to bind it with some salve I have for healing. It won't help the pain.
Ariane sucked air.
You just enjoy cutting up my dresses, she said, teeth clenched.
Key smiled and set to work, and Elaine grabbed Ariane's hand.
It'll be all right, Ariane, she soothed. Won't it, Mr. Goodwin?
Mr. Goodwin grinned soothingly and squeezed Elaine's arm.
It will, miss. It will.
Somewhere on the other side of the tree, the crush of leaves and branches evidenced that many men now advanced on their position, though at a slow pace. Davin jogged up just as Key yanked the knot of her bandage tight, and Ariane writhed with the new pain. He knelt and took her hand.
It's not bad, she said upon seeing his stricken face.
And then the pounding of gunshots utterly destroyed any peace left in the forest. Ariane hunched instinctively. It sounded like 100 bullets whizzed about them, popping into the bark of trees, thudding into the ground and ripping through leaves.
There's at least 30 of those Cretesian rats out there, Captain Gage reported, leaning around the tree. Probably more. And they've got lanterns. They will pay for that.
Ariane used Davin's grip to come to her feet, the initial shock of her injury fading.
Do we run? She asked,
testing her weight on her injured leg. It hurt. But she could manage. Davin released her hand and unlimbered his rifle.
We have an advantageous position here, and I think we can finish them. You, Elaine, and Mr. Goodwin need to move. Key, there is a log across the stream about a half mile up. It looks like one the Aur Catan have used before. Take this group up and wait for me.
Be careful, Davin, Ariane said,
noting the weariness in his eyes. She wondered how much he had rested, or if he were hurt and wouldn't admit it. He was stubborn enough for anything. He kissed her forehead, and then he and Captain Gage circled the tree, and the shooting began in earnest from both sides. Key grabbed Ariane's arm and draped it over her shoulder.
Mr. Goodwin, escort Elaine and follow us. Give me the moss back. We'll need to go without its light until the forest can hide it.
They pushed east as Davin had instructed, but her wounded leg and the ensnaring sticks and plants turned a half-mile walk into an anemic crawl in the dark. After a few minutes, Ariane was able to limp on without assistance. Mr. Goodwin swore under his breath more than once, as branches and rocks tripped him up, Elaine chastising him each time for his foul language. The gunfire behind them continued nearly unabated, but more frequently the agonized yell of a struck victim added to the cacophony. And then Davin let loose a roar that set grown men to screaming like children. Mr. Goodwin chuckled.
I'm starting to enjoy that sound.
Ariane liked it, but from a distance. She chanced to look back toward the clearing and paid for it by stubbing the shin of her injured leg on a granite rock in front of her. One of Mr. Goodwin's swear words leapt to mind, and she used a sharp intake and exhale of breath to cover the sound of it. The farther they went, the more the gurgling of the stream veiled the sounds of the gunfight behind them, settling raw nerves but compounding the worry.
There it is, Key said.
Ariane peered into the gloom. A pale ray of moonlight, breaking through the canopy, revealed where a half-blasted tree had fallen across the stream. A veritable garden of ferns spread thick along the stream bed, interspersed with sizable hunks of granite.
It was beautiful, but haunting in the dimness, and they pressed toward it.
"We won't cross until Davin or Danger comes," Keith said. "I think I..."
A thud behind Ariane startled her, but not as much as Mr. Goodwin pitching forward and falling face down into the ferns. Elaine yelped, and Ariane spun, finding a man behind her sister, his pistol pressing into the hair of Elaine's head, and his other arm clenched around her shoulders. The light from Key's moss bloomed, casting a pale blue glow on the face of her sister's assailant. Melkor reigns. Maybe it was a trick of the moss's odd light, but his face seemed slack, his gaze lifeless, as if he were asleep with his eyes open.
"Throw the spear away, Northwoman," Melkor said evenly, voice as colourless as his face. "Throw it away, or I kill the girl. Do it now."
Key hesitated a moment, and then tossed the spear toward the tree trunk bridge where it thunked into the wood. Ariane raised her hands.
"It's me you want, Mr. Rains," she said, stepping forward slowly. "Let her go."
Now his face twitched, the eyes that were so dead moments before, spasming back and forth as if he were in a dream. Even his limbs trembled, and Ariane feared his finger might accidentally pull the trigger. She took another step forward and he clenched his teeth, eyes suddenly unblinking, wide and firmly on hers.
"You've burned it out of me once," he said haltingly, as if fighting for every word. "Do it again, now!"
"Do not go near him,"
Key warned, stepping forward with her.
"Stay back, Northwoman,"
Melkor hissed, Elaine flinching as he moved the gun and leveled the barrel at Key.
"Just Lady Hightower."
Another convulsion racked his body, and he firmed himself with effort. Even in the weak light of the moss, Ariane could see a rivulet of sweat drip off of his strong jaw.
"Burn it out."
"Let her go, and I'll do it,"
Ariane countered. She could guess what he struggled against. She could sense that dark feeling in her heart as she approached him. It was that same shadow that had popped out of him in the Flame Cathedral, only now its influence upon the man seemed worse, like an infection starting to fester. He shoved Elaine to the side but kept his gun pointed at her blonde head. Another gun was tucked in his belt, a rifle slung across his back. He extended his other quivering hand.
"Hurry!"
As she had in the Flame Cathedral, Ariane raised her palms, a warm fire building upon them, its glow reflecting in Melkor's strained eyes. She reached out and grabbed his exposed wrist and flared the fire of her hands. He screamed, and the shadow she had seen before leapt from his chest and fell among the ferns at their feet. She extinguished the fire, and immediately his face relaxed and his tremors ceased. His eyes, hard but his own, held hers.
"Thank you, Lady..."
The shadow leapt upon him again, sinking into his body on the left side of his chest. He convulsed and fell to his knees. Ariane stepped back and, sensing an opportunity, signalled to Elaine to come to her. But the moment her sister put one foot forward, Melkor's face focused and his gun snapped up, pointing at Elaine's head.
"Don't," he growled. "Again, Lady Hightower. Burn it out."
With his free hand, he ripped open his shirt, buttons popping away, revealing the mark of the primal water on his chest along with something else, something like a blotch, a stain. The mark of the shadow. The primal shadow was real, no matter what the Aur Catan thought.
"Burn it now,"
he pointed to the blotch on his chest. She approached cautiously and knelt in front of him. Now she was trembling along with him. What covenant had he made with this dark power? She understood what he wanted her to do, what he hoped would happen, but would it work? She placed her right hand on the odd blotch and pushed fire into her palm. Grimacing, he placed his hand on top of hers, pushing it onto his chest. The smell of burning flesh and his cry of agony filled the clearing, and it felt to Ariane almost as if her hand was sinking inside his flesh. The shadow burst forth from his body again, silently sinking into the ferns beside them. Melkor's body relaxed. Ariane removed her hand from his seared flesh, the burned brand of her palm, completely obscuring the blotch that had been there before. Melkor seemed almost insensate,
eyes closed and head slumping to his chest. She ripped the pistol out of his hand and stood grabbing Elaine's arm and pulling her away from the Cretesian spy. A low chuckle struggled from his lips, building into a laugh of joy tinged with madness.
"Ariane," Key said.
Ariane turned toward her, finding Key pointing toward the fallen tree across the water. There, next to Key's discarded spear, was the short figure of the shadow. Though it had no face, she could sense its gaze upon them, the sickening feeling of wrongness washing over her like a cold draught from a window someone forgot to shut.
"Keep an eye on it, Key," she said.
When she turned back to Mr. Raines, he had stood, legs wobbly, but he had pulled his other gun from his belt and pointed it at her. She chastised herself for not taking it, too. Unfortunately, the pistol she had commandeered from him, she held down at her side, and she knew he could kill her well before she could snap it up.
"Again, I thank you," he said,
voice raspy, barrel pointed between her eyes. Ariane swallowed hard. This was the end for her, she knew it. Melkor was a member of the Fist, insanely loyal and utterly cruel. If his mission was to assassinate her, he would do it. Key moved in front of her, shielding her from Melkor's gun, her arms outstretched.
"You know,"
he said, taking a step forward and craning his head around Key to see her,
"when I read the Queen's will and discovered that you were her chosen successor, I couldn't believe it. I thought you too soft, but I see that you have some iron after all."
Ariane regarded the hardened man, trying to divine his purpose. Could he be so callous as to kill her after she had freed him from the shadow, or did he want her alive? His eyes burned with purpose, but he wasn't settled. Something still churned in his mind, some decision he hadn't quite made. She needed to stall him. The shooting in the distance had nearly evaporated, and Davin still roared.
"Just leave us be," Ariane said. "You can just walk away."
"Out of the way, North woman,"
Melkor ordered, taking another step closer and pointing the gun at Elaine.
"Or I start shooting."
Key didn't budge.
"Step aside, Key," Ariane said, tapping the woman's leg with the gun. "It will be all right."
Key nodded. And as she moved to the right, the snowfinch carving leapt from her shoulder right at Melkor's face. Ariane raised the gun and fired. Distracted by the bird, Melkor didn't stand a chance. The bullet took the awful man in the belly, a red stain blooming on his shirt. Eyes wide, he staggered back, but didn't fall. He raised his gun, Ariane expecting immediate death, but he hesitated, a smile coming to his lips. Key stepped in front of her again, and again Melkor pointed the gun at Elaine.
"Move," he ordered. "I want to look her in the eyes."
"No,"
Key said. A rustling in the bushes diverted their attention. Mr. Goodwin struggled to his feet just behind Melkor, a thick trail of blood drying on the side of his face. The Cretesian pointed the gun at him for a moment, but Mr. Goodwin skirted him, coming to stand in front of Elaine to shield her from the gun. Melkor probed the wound in his belly, looked up, and then dropped his gun. Hands raised, he knelt on the ground.
"I'll make you a bargain, Lady Hightower," he said. "Cauterize the wound, and I will tell you how the Cretesians plan to overthrow Belshire tomorrow."
"You are a liar,"
she said, searching his intense grey eyes.
"Not about this, Lady Hightower," he countered. "I give you my word." "Is that what you say in Bittermarch?"
"Your word means nothing," she said.
He shrugged.
"If your nation means anything to you, you should hear what I have to say. Cauterize the wound."
"Let him die," Key said. "I haven't read him, but I know filth such as this without having to try."
Ariane weighed the options. Melkor was growing pale. She could not trust the man, but if he were telling the truth, it would cost her little to hear what he had to say.
"Very well," she said. "Key, Mr. Goodwin, come with me. On your back, Mr. Raines."
He sank back into the ferns, and Ariane approached and knelt next to him. Key held the moss in her left hand, and from her belt pulled a bone dagger much like Davin's, pressing it to Melkor's throat. Mr. Goodwin sat on the Cretesian's legs, his own knife at the ready. It took a moment for Ariane to locate the source of the wound within all the blood. Melkor just watched her, face set. He nodded and she pressed her burning palm onto the bullet wound. Eyes crammed closed, he gritted his teeth. The rancid smell of burning blood and flesh wrinkled her nose again. Only a moment, and it was done. Melkor relaxed, but in a flash his left arm grabbed Key's wrist and he twisted. She yelped in pain and somehow he had the dagger. His other hand grabbed the front of Ariane's dress and he pulled her down, knife tip pressed against her neck.
"Back off," he said. "Back off and I won't kill her. What I have to say is for her alone."
Key and Mr. Goodwin stood stock still. "Step back," she ordered. "Stand with Elaine." Slowly they retreated, and Ariane turned to find Melkor staring at her with an odd smile.
"Now listen," he said. "A force of Cretesian soldiers is hiding behind a hill to the northeast of Belshire. The remaining Cretesian force will attack the gates and then retreat. If your men open the gates to attack what they think is a fleeing, weakened force, the hidden regiment will slaughter them and pour into the city. Do you understand?"
"Yes," she said, every swallow reminding her of the knife at her throat. He seemed sincere with his information, but why would he divulge it to her? He pulled her closer.
"This is important. You are the queen of a nation full of traitors, even among those you call friends and family. I doubt you know the half of the treachery that your peers have committed, or what they'll do when this war is over. Let me live, and you can have my information and my skills to aid you."
His knife flashed. At first, Ariane thought she was done for. When he released her, she fell back, finding that he'd only sliced away a lock of her hair, which he clutched in his right hand. Dumbfounded, she scrambled back into the welcoming arms of Elaine and Key, who steadied her. With a groan, Melkor struggled to his knees, and on seeing him fully revealed in the weak light, Ariane doubted her ministrations had done any good. His complexion seemed more hollow and pale than it had just moments before.
"What say you, Queen of Bittermarch?" he asked with a weak, gravelly voice. "Are you ready to face your traitorous people alone, or could you make use of a man like me?"
"I won't be alone," he laughed, blood spittle flecking his lips.
"You think Baron Carver can guide you? If you want to survive the first year of your reign, you'll need something more than a man of principle. You'll need a monster loyal to you. Let me help you."
Ariane was no fool. How could she employ a man of such wanton and callous cruelty? She could never be sure of his loyalty. And something within her, some instinct, told her that his motives had little to do with helping Bittermarch. She opened her mouth to say as much when the befouling feelings of the primal shadow seeped into her heart. But there was something else, an odour that reminded her of the stale, disused room at Frostborn where Asper Carver's corpse had moulded.
"Ariane,"
Key said. Ariane turned, following Key's gaze back to the fallen tree across the stream. The primal shadow still stood there, but behind it was something else, a bear of enormous proportions. She froze, her mind not wanting to believe her eyes. A chuffing roar rumbled deep within the bear's throat, and it lumbered forward, wood whining under the weight of its heavy tread.